Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Before we begin today's show, we want to give you an update on the latest fires in Northern California's Napa and Sonoma counties. The winds unfortunately kicked up last night, causing the fires to spread very quickly. According to CAL FIRE, 11,000 acres have been burned, and the fire is 0% contained. Thousands of people were evacuated overnight. CAL FIRE says there have been more than 8,100 wildfires in California this year, and firefighters continue to fight 25 major blazes. You can find our latest shows about how we got here and the changes that are desperately needed at yourcallradio.org. You can also find shows there about air quality, and I apologize if I cough in advance, because unfortunately our air quality seems to be getting worse by the hour. And we will bring you updates throughout the week. As this is all happening, the Trump administration continues to weaken or dismantle environmental regulations. The administration has removed scientists from the EPA's advisory board, removed climate change resources from the EPA website. They've placed climate deniers and oil, gas, and coal lobbyists in key positions. According to Harvard Law School and other sources, nearly 70 environmental rules and regulations have been rolled back or have been eliminated altogether. An additional 30 rollbacks are currently in progress. So today we're going to talk about the short and long-term impacts of the administration's environmental protection rollbacks on efforts to tackle all of these problems, the climate crisis, the fires, the floods, just so much. In her recent piece in The Intercept, one of today's guests, Sharon Lerner, writes, "As wildfires destroy millions of acres in California, Oregon, and Washington, and an unprecedented series of hurricanes cause historic flooding in the South, leaving parts of the region uninhabitable, the Trump administration has been racing to reverse rules designed to prevent exactly these kinds of climate disasters. Throughout his presidency, Donald Trump has presided over the rollback of more environmental rules and regulations than any other president." Sharon Lerner is an investigative reporter for The Intercept, where she covers health and the environment. Hi, Sharon. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us again, Sharon. We are also joined by Caitlin McCoy, a Climate, Clean Air, and Energy Fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard University, which has been tracking the Trump administration's environmental rollbacks in great detail. Hi, Caitlin. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to ask you both about how you think this climate crisis is being covered and framed in the presidential election. It's just in 36 days. The first debate is tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Chris Wallace will be moderating. He is the anchor of Fox News Sunday. He has released the topics for the night, and the climate crisis is not one of them, and he's getting criticized for that. Sharon, what are your thoughts about how the climate crisis is being covered in this election overall?
It's unimaginable. Yeah, I mean, that is so unthinkable and inappropriate. And, you know, obviously we're living in a time of multiple crises and really a moment of chaos unlike any other in our history and certainly in my lifetime. And so there, you know, it's understandable that there are competing interests, but nothing approaches the enormity and the importance of the climate right now, even with all the other criminal and, you know, massive issues that we have. It's like, you know, the metaphor that I think of often is that we're like, you know, screaming at each other as we are inside a car that is driving off a cliff. And that's how it feels to me. And I think, I can only imagine, I'm in New York right now, but as you daily breathe the air that we all know is the result of fires that are made worse by climate change, and climate change that is made worse by these policies that we're going to talk about today, it's inexcusable, it's unconscionable, it's unacceptable.
Yeah. Caitlin, what would you add?
Well, I of course agree with what Sharon has said, that the idea that we will not be hearing from our two presidential candidates on climate change is unthinkable. And I'm sure it especially feels that way for you all in California, in Northern California and across the West Coast, where all of you are living through such a serious and unprecedented fire season this year. In a sense, though, I guess it's not a surprise. We know the president doesn't like to talk about climate change whenever given an opportunity, you know, or pressed to say something about the environment. He always leans on the same talking point, saying, you know, we have the cleanest air, the cleanest water, and things like that. And just lying about the truth of what his administration has been up to for the last 4 years, which is systematically dismantling all of the protections that we have for the environment and public health, and instead just blatantly saying that no, everything is fine, and trying to make it so simply by saying that.
Yeah. And Sharon, I mean, given that you are in New York, I mean, just to let you know what's happening here, you know, overnight, thousands of people had their electricity turned off. One hospital, as far as I know, was evacuated. An elder care home was evacuated. I was seeing photos on Twitter at 3 a.m. of people who were evacuated to Santa Rosa, but that evacuation center was packed. And so then they had to be driven down to Petaluma. It's about a half hour south, to try to find them a place to stay. I mean, these were people in a hospital, in an elder home. And in our last set of fires, I've been reading about all of the health effects. The strokes, percentage of strokes have gone up. People are dealing with asthma, constant coughing. I mean, the things that we've been talking about for the last 10 years, talking about how it's going to get worse, it's happening right now. I mean, the quotes in one of these CNN articles, Craig Butello, whose family has grapes in St. Helena, says it's a cremation. I mean, people are just watching. Well, they're not watching in person, but obviously they're seeing that their homes and structures, so many things are just being wiped out because these fires are just moving so quickly.
It's devastating, and I'm so saddened to hear that, and it's so hard to keep up because it is crisis upon crisis just within the climate realm. But of course, when you're talking about patients being evacuated, we do have to remember that we're talking about during a pandemic and elderly patients being evacuated to crowded centers during a pandemic. That is devastating. You were talking about Caitlin, about how the administration, you know, talks one way and it is completely counter to reality, basically. And for the piece that we're talking about today, that I guess that I wrote last week, or it might have been the week before, but about, and is really just an accounting of the sort of last minute rollbacks, the things that they're trying to push through, even, you know, while the fires are raging, while the flooding is happening, while we're heading toward this election, they're still working to get everything in under the wire that they can, and obviously, as with all my pieces, I made sure that every bit of it was true and double and triple checked. And as one does, as a journalist does, I went to the EPA for comment. Many of the rollbacks that I talk about were done by the Environmental Protection Agency. So, of course, I saw a comment from them. And it was a sort of remarkable experience. This is that, you know, standard as a journalist, you know, you always engage and seek the perspective of whoever you're writing about, in this case, a federal agency. But in my years of reporting, I've never felt the need or really to fact check the response of a federal agency. But when I ran all my reporting by them, I want to tell you, if you don't mind, what they said to me and then what happened afterwards. So basically, it's, you know, the piece is a long accounting of sort of the rollback related to climate and not that have already happened in the environmental realm and the ones that are being sort of pushed through at the last minute. And an EPA spokesperson said in response, the story is pushing a false narrative that isn't rooted in fact, and then went on to sort of try and paint this picture of the administration, the Trump administration, as actually protecting the environment. And he said, air pollution in this country has fallen. We've delisted 61 Superfund sites, invested $40 billion in water infrastructure, collected more in criminal and civil penalties than the Obama administration, and went on. And then what I did, and what my editor, you know, encouraged me to do, and I think it was the right thing, was that I went and fact-checked every statement that they put in their response, and then have four or five paragraphs after that showing them what they were saying was in fact not true, or in one case was just sort of put in the wrong context, and it, you know, it wasn't out and out false. It was just bending facts a little bit. But anyway, this is the crazy context in which we find ourselves, where, you know, where we're operating. It's completely different conversations at this point. And, you know, all my sources are experts in their area, like you, Caitlin, you know, but attorneys and scientists who have spent their lives following these issues and can document very well the impact of the policies that we're talking about. So it was really just a remarkable experience on my end. I just thought I'd mention it because it was so unusual and upsetting.
Hmm. Caitlin, do you have any thoughts as you're hearing Sharon talk about this experience?
Just that I, of course, you know, over the last few years have borne witness to this exact same situation. Even just last week on Twitter, EPA decided to tweet from the official account saying, over the past 4 years, EPA has taken 4 concrete actions to reduce greenhouse gases. So they put together a little thread to try to tout their record on climate change. And I was sort of astounded to see that. But when you run through it, you know, they mentioned the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, which is the rule that the Trump administration created to replace the Clean Power Plan, which is a rule to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. And they say that their rule would cut carbon emissions by 34% by 2030. But in reality, that 34% drop is actually attributed to just market forces. And you can see that in their own regulatory analysis. The rule that they created only will get potentially 0.7% reduction on top of business as usual market forces at play by 2030. And so they're trying to take credit for the, you know, entire realm of market forces that make coal uneconomical these days. And so, I mean, everything that Sharon has said rings true in that there's a lot of sort of selective presentation of information by the agency, which is really disturbing to see from a federal agency that we should be able to put our trust in. And there's a lot of taking credit for programs that were already in existence. They tweeted that same line that Sharon just mentioned about reducing air pollution, you know, by 7% over the last 4 years. But it just, you know, it begs the question, is that 7% due to regulations that were strengthened or new regulations that were put in place over the last 4 years? And the answer is very obviously no. Those policies that have allowed us to reduce our air pollution 7% in the last 4 years are policies that the administration has been working tirelessly to weaken or dismantle.
Well, I want to give out the phone number. If you have any questions for our guest today about the rollbacks that we are seeing under the Trump administration, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Sharon Lerner is an investigative reporter for The Intercept, and I hope you can take some time to read her piece, As the West Burns, the Trump Administration Races to Demolish Environmental Protections, Polluters and Their Agents agents and government want to finalize as many rollbacks as possible before the election. We're also joined by Caitlin McCoy, a climate, clean air, and energy fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard, which has been tracking the administration's rollbacks in great detail. And you can also find a link to their work. You can email us your call at kalw.org. You know, we could do a week-long series about these rollbacks because there are so many of them. Sharon, given that you follow this so closely, what would you say are some of the major, I mean, there are so many, but when you look at the ones that have had the most drastic effect, is there a way to maybe choose a couple? Or, I mean, how do you look at this, given that there are almost 100?
Yeah, I mean, big picture. So, you know, they fall. So we've been talking about the climate-related ones because they are most critical. But, you know, it's also in other realms they've been doing. You know, they have also been rolling back. We were talking about air pollution a moment ago. We've seen it across the board also with toxics, a lot of issues that have come up around toxics, including pesticides. We saw that in the very beginning of the administration where the administration, the EPA was poised to ban a pesticide that has been linked to brain damage in children called chlorpyrifos, and they reversed course on it after I did a lot of reporting on that. They were Dow had been fighting hard against it. Dow also, you know, the company and the CEO, big supporters of Trump, and financially and otherwise. And basically, it was reversed. But there are so many things. Again, we're talking dozens, 70, I guess it is, that have actually been completed. But so just in terms of how I was thinking about it, I guess in my mind I had sort of a split between climate on the one hand and sort of everything else on the other. And I will say that that's a somewhat artificial divide, though, because when you talk about, like, the Clean Power Plan, we do have, of course, really important climate benefits, but then also you have air pollution benefits, right? And air pollution benefits that come with a cost, like a health cost, that is actually in several cases tallied up by the EPA. And so, you know, they've said with the rollback, the replacement of the Clean Power Plan with ACE, which Caitlin was just mentioning, that is something that will have a toll of thousands, like thousands of people will die as a result of that. You can also see really direct health consequences from methane, the methane rollback, which is also an important climate policy, but also will have direct impact on people immediately, both, again, in terms of climate, but also in terms of it turns into ozone, which causes chronic diseases, asthma, heart disease, cancer, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I guess one way of, like, deciding what is the most important is, you know, in terms of people dead, literally dead. And you can say that these rollbacks will have huge, thousands and thousands of people will die as a result. But on the other hand, you have the consequences of the climate rollbacks. And, you know, what I was talking to people for this piece, on the one hand, I was talking about sort of the nitty-gritty of what does this role do, and then on the other hand, it was, and how, assuming, you know, we have a new administration in place at some point, hopefully in January, that, you know, assuming that happens, how do you recover? You know, with many of the rollbacks, the recovery seems to be, and I'm sure Caitlin can speak to this more, you know, it's this very complex rulemaking process that just sort of tacks, and then they, you know, reverse it and start, they have to make rules in the other direction. They have to undo a rule and start another rule. Or in some cases, they're not going to be defending lawsuits that are already in play. But the sense I got overarchingly is that, you know, with a lot of these things, there is a road back. It's like, here's how we're going to reverse course. And it's, you know, it is going to be a lot of work, but you can see how to get back. But with climate, I was told, and it makes sense to me, that in some ways there is no recovering. I mean, obviously we need to and will change course as soon as possible. But at the same time, all of the greenhouse gases that have been emitted, all the time that we've lost at this incredibly critical moment, you know, that they can't fix that.
Caitlin, what would you add first, big picture, how you're all looking at this? Because you and your team really do amazing work. You describe the history of each rule and its current status, including litigation and court decisions. So when you look at this from a big picture perspective, you know, how are you thinking about these issues?
Yeah, well, this is a good moment for me to give a shout out to my team. So I work with a fellow attorney, Hannah Viscara, and then we also have a legal fellow. She recently left to take a new position, but her name was Laura Bloomer. And the three of us in a team of research assistants who are current Harvard Law School students maintained this huge tracker. And so it's a lot of work and it's a team effort. And when I look at the rules, I think I look at them in terms of short-term effect and long-term effect. And most rules have both, some to kind of lean one way or the other. So for example, I would say when we're thinking about what rules really have an impact right now, I'm looking at things like the rule that gave us a new definition for waters of the United States, which is a crucial definition under the Clean Water Act. And essentially by revising that definition, the Trump administration has excluded a tremendous amount of wetlands and also quite a few waterways from that definition so that they no longer have the protections of the Clean Water Act. And that means that they can be developed. We can pave right over them and create subdivisions, and we lose all of the ecosystem benefits of those wetlands, which we know also provide tremendous flood protection, flood water absorption, which is really important for our resilience in this era of climate change where we have increasing storms. So that's something that I would say, you know, we can look at and say that has an immediate impact. Another rule, something called what's in, once in, always in. It's a policy about hazardous air pollutants. Basically, it also changes a definition. It's about to be finalized probably this week or next week, and basically allows facilities emitting hazardous air pollutants to emit more hazardous air pollutants. And these types of pollutants are carcinogens. So people that live around those facilities are going to be immediately impacted. And then I look at other rules that have kind of a longer forecast, and they also do important things and have effects, you know, immediately, but also, you know, they're perhaps more impactful in the long term. Things like the clean car rules, or essentially the corporate average fuel economy standards for cars and the greenhouse gas emissions standards for cars. And so those are important because we know that the auto industry works with a really long lead time. They're developing the vehicle technologies now that they're going to need to comply with standards years into the future. And transportation is now actually our largest source of greenhouse gas emissions here in the United States, with the vast majority coming from passenger cars, SUVs, light-duty trucks. That's actually where the bulk of our transportation emissions come from in this country, which is our largest source now, surpassing the electricity sector. So the sooner that we can get that sector using less gas, moving towards hybrid, moving towards all electric vehicles, the better for the air pollution, as Sharon was saying, with immediate effects on people's lives and well-being and the length of their lives, but also from a decarbonization perspective and trying to make progress on climate. So the fact that those rules have been modified and modified in a way that locks them in so far into the future is really troubling. And the same is true for the affordable clean energy rule, which I already mentioned, that replaces the Clean Power Plan. That's another one with a long outlook that just allows these coal plants to continue operating instead of setting stringent standards for them that make operators really think twice about whether these plants should stay online and continue burning coal into the future.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Caitlin McCoy, Climate, Clean Air, and Energy Fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard University. They've been tracking the administration's environmental rollbacks. Sharon Lerner is an investigative reporter for The Intercept, covering health and the environment. And you can find Sharon's piece, and you can also find Caitlin and her team's database of rollbacks at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will be talking about what's ahead with the Supreme Court nominee, Amy Coney Barrett. The hearings are scheduled to begin on October 12th and are expected to take place that entire week. So we'll be talking about that. And again, the first presidential debate is tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. We will open the lines on Wednesday to get your reaction. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, we do actually, because these hearings are going to be taking place all week, unfortunately, that means we're going to lose an entire week of election shows. So if you have any thoughts or comments about how you'd like us to cover the election, given that we don't have that much time, we'd love to hear from you. Your call at kalw.org. Today, as fires continue to rage in Northern California, especially with this fire that just really took off overnight, we're talking about the Trump administration's environmental rules and regulations rollbacks with Sharon Lerner, an investigative reporter for The Intercept, and Caitlin McCoy, Climate, Clean Air, and Energy Fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall at kalw.org. Caitlin, one more point that Sharon was making about what happens if Biden does win, for example. Greg writes in and says, you know, there is a full detailed inventory of these regulations that will be struck from the books. You all have put that together. I mean, we've talked about this on so many shows. How long will it take? How difficult will it be to ensure that these environmental protections are back on the books?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would say that, you know, the best thing to do would be to kind of think about the pace of the Trump administration's environmental rollbacks. And that's about the pace at which we could try to put things back together, because so much of it depends on where specific rules are in the process. So if there's still just a proposed rule, if it's still just a proposal, a new administration can go ahead and withdraw that. And that's pretty quick, obviously. But if the rule has been finalized, then a new administration would need to go ahead and propose repealing that rule and then potentially replacing it by crafting a brand new rule and putting that out there, accepting comment on it, and then crafting a final rule. And that process takes time. I mean, it takes time by design, because we want rules to be really carefully thought through. We want to accept comments from affected communities and experts and make sure that we have the best information to go into the regulations that we create. But unfortunately, that means that, you know, we can't just flip a switch if there is a new administration in January and undo everything that has been done over the last 4 years.
What would you add, Sharon? You wrote about this in your recent piece.
Yeah, well, so, you know, it depends, like, there are so many things that we include in the category rollbacks right now, and some of it is rulemaking, as Caitlin was just saying, and then, but also, like, in, so
substantively, there are all these other changes that will be that aren't necessarily going to be addressed the same way. And two things that I'm thinking of specifically, and they're not climate changes, but they're having to do with one is the cancer guidelines. So I recently did a piece about the rollbacks, Trump rollbacks, and cancer, and looking specifically at some of the communities that live by sort of fence line to these giant chemical and oil plants. And one of the issues that's coming up for these communities is that we recently, sort of recently, 2016, revamped the what's called TSCA, the chemical regulation law, basically. And it was the first time in generations, 40 years, I think, it was a very long time, that we had a new law. And that law said, okay, now under this new law, you're going to have to evaluate all these chemicals. And this is sort of a one-time, you know, shot at it. And we tried, the law tried to be very specific about how to do that. These are toxic chemicals that are often emitted by these plants. And what happened was that those evaluations fell to this administration. So basically, you had in there, you know, we know that Andrew Wheeler, who the EPA administrator, is a former coal lobbyist. You had a lot of people from the American Chemistry Council, which is the trade group that represents the chemical companies, and a lot of people who actually work for some of these chemical companies at EPA, basically writing or influencing the evaluation of these chemicals in ways that were very advantageous to the companies. And environmental advocates were extremely upset about this. And unfortunately, this is going to be a lot harder to roll back because it's not exactly a rule. It's just unfortunate timing for these assessments. And there are also, similarly, I kind of ran into this in this reporting, that you know, cancer guidelines, basically the EPA has these guidelines that guide how we address cancer within the agency, and that are now being rewritten again by some very industry-friendly scientists in ways that could have a lasting impact. So I just wanted to kind of add that in addition to this kind of plotting rulemaking that the EPA does, there are all these other ways to sort of influence policy and change things in ways, some of which are going to be more lasting.
Can we spend a little bit of time talking about the methane changes? You write about this extensively in your piece, Sharon. Among the recently finalized actions that will have devastating and long-lasting climate consequences are the rescinding of limits on methane emissions during oil and gas production and processing. You write, methane is a climate pollutant that traps over 80 times more heat than carbon dioxide in a 20-year period, and the United States is already releasing way too much of it.
I'm so glad you asked about this. Am I cutting you off? I hope not. But
no.
Methane is so important. Did you want to ask me? Sorry.
Please. Just talk about why it's so important.
Well, methane is, I feel like, this under-recognized factor in climate change. So important. Basically, it is, as you just said, very powerful in the short term in terms of warming, right? And over a 20-year period, way, way, way more. I think it's 87 times more powerful than CO2. The other thing that's sort of amazing about methane is that while CO2 reductions will kind of be experienced, you know, we have to cut CO2. I'm not saying we don't, but when those cuts that we're making will be kind of experienced in terms of the climate down the road, decades down the road. And with methane, you're going to see the impacts almost immediately. And what is really important about methane, too, is that methane, we now know a lot of it is being released through fracking. And this is, you know, obviously a subject that's going to be, it has been really important politically, and it's going to be extremely important, even if Biden wins the election, because I think it's this people call it the low-hanging fruit. This is something that can be addressed. But anyway, but instead of, you know, addressing it, this administration is actually going backwards with it and has rolled back two important rules regarding methane. So it's extremely frustrating. And I'm sure that, Caitlin, do you want to... So they're very recent, the methane rollbacks, and at least one of them is now being challenged in court. Caitlin, did you want to say more about methane?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. My colleague Hannah is the one who actually covers this rule very closely, but I've read up enough that I can tell you, as Sharon said, there are two rules. And so one is more impactful than the other just because it covers far more emissions. And that first rule, it removes all of the standards for methane and for volatile organic compounds, which are a precursor to creating ozone, for production, processing, transmission, and storage. So really all segments of the oil and gas industry. So this rule, as Sharon said, has been challenged, and it was actually recently stayed, meaning that it's been temporarily paused from going into effect while the court considers whether to allow it to go into effect or extend this pause for the duration of the challenge to the rule. And then there's a second rule. It is obviously impactful in its own right, but it's called more the technical amendments, and it affects some smaller sources, but sources nonetheless of methane, things like well completion. So when you finish drilling an oil and gas well, the standards for ensuring that that well is properly completed and capped off so that it won't continue to leak methane, you know, after you leave it, and other things like storage vessels and inspections. So the first one is the one that is super impactful, both in terms of the range of emissions that it covers, but it also really dramatically modifies the way that EPA approaches emissions from the oil and gas industry, emissions of methane.
You know, listening to both of you and reading about a lot of these rollbacks, I wonder, Caitlin, do you think that the overall public understands exactly what is happening here? I mean, the average person on the street, you know, probably doesn't understand the importance of methane.
Right. I think that that's what's been so difficult over the last 3 years. I mean, we created the tracker in an effort to try to communicate all of these intricacies of administrative law to a broader audience, because you're right, it is really easy to just get lost in the jargon and have these seem like really complex processes that are happening in Washington, D.C., and it's unclear how it might be, you know, affecting an individual person somewhere in the country. And I think that that's ultimately what's so insidious about these rollbacks is, like I said, some of them have, you know, sort of a longer time frame, and they're not going to result in things like trying to turn on your tap and the water that comes out is black or no water comes out, you know, really, really sort of tangible and dramatic things that people can see and feel and touch and taste in their everyday lives. But the fact of the matter is, we know those things are there. I mean, air pollution is a really big one, and the Trump administration has done everything in its power to dismantle our air pollution standards in a variety of different ways for a variety of different sources across the country. But the fact of the matter is, you know, people don't really feel that. It's just that, you know, as Sharon said, people are going to die prematurely. We know that the amount of premature deaths that we're going to experience due to increased air pollution from all these different changes, it's all quantified in there, you know, in the administrative record. And that's what's so difficult. I'm constantly in a battle of, you know, whenever I talk to journalists, they ask me, oh, well, which one of these rollbacks is something that really affects people's lives, you know? Mm-hmm. And they all do. But a lot of them do so in hard to see ways, in ways that might be a little further down the road, or ways that involve, you know, sort of chains of causation, and that don't always, you know, feel so clear and so immediate. And that's really the big challenge of communicating about these.
What are your thoughts on this, Sharon?
Well, I agree. I mean, first of all, that people don't realize that already thousands of people die every year from air pollution in our country. Like, that's just true before the rollback, right? So we're already at, you know, unsafe, you know, levels when it comes to ozone, other particulate matter. And that's, so we were starting there. And then, like, with ozone and particulate matter, what happened was they decided to revisit these standards. And instead of doing it the usual way, where you have what they call a CASAC, this Clean Air Scientific Committee, right, which is filled with experts that are independent, they decided that people who were independent could no longer serve if they received EPA grants, and instead they put a whole bunch of people from industry on these committees. And then they had these separate panels that advised on ozone and on particulate matter, that on specifically on those issues, and they kind of did away with those. And what they came up with was, instead of improving these standards, again, because in both cases people die because of this pollution already, instead of actually, which is what the independent experts who actually formed outside of the government to have their own little, you know, committee this year or this year, last year, whenever it was. But basically they said, you know what, these standards actually need to be more stringent. And in fact, that's not what happened. They just let them stand. And they did it because they were in power and wanted to make sure that they did the favor to the industry that actually wants that done, you know, which are the mostly the energy industry and polluting industries that put out these, you know, whose waste creates these hazards. So anyway, just to, you know, dive into that little one, but there's a picture of, it is incredibly frustrating to communicate about this. There are some communities that are very aware of the threats. And we talked a little bit about water with the WOTUS, the Waters of the U.S. rollback was very big and significant. And really flies in the face of the administration's rhetoric that they are clean. You know, they would say, well, we want clean air and water. Well, WOTUS, their rule would certainly not result in cleaner water. But the other thing that I've covered very closely is, chemical pollution from perfluorinated chemicals. And that's another thing where the rhetoric of the EPA in particular, they say, oh, we are tackling that. We're out ahead. We are the most aggressive administration ever, and yet they've made several commitments on those particular chemicals, which, and I can tell you because I've spoken to them, the people in polluted communities are tracking this very closely and understand the significance to their lives very well. But these folks, basically, the commitments that they made, they have not lived up to, and they have not actually taken action on these chemicals as promised. And again, the people in these communities who basically, these are chemicals called PFAS that cause cancer, many other diseases, and are now in water across the United States and drinking water. And people are terrified about it and really, really wanted the EPA to take action, and that hasn't happened. And that doesn't even count really as a rollback. Mm. So, you know, but just to the point of like how difficult it is, to convey.
Today we're talking about the Trump administration's environmental rollbacks with The Intercept reporter Sharon Lerner and Caitlin McCoy, a climate, clean air, and energy fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard. Why don't we end the show today talking about what's at stake with this election. MIT Technology Review has a piece called Climate Scientists Are Terrified of a Second Trump Term. And in the piece, Jane Long, a former associate director at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab, is quoted saying, if Trump is not elected, it won't make me stop worrying about climate change. It will still be horribly hard to address. But if Trump is elected, the human race is not immune from extinction. You could make a bunch of really bad decisions and wipe out a whole lot of life. Again, a quote from Jane Long, former associate director at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab. Caitlin, what are you hearing from climate scientists and others about what's at stake with this election?
Well, I can tell you from a legal perspective, you know, what's at stake, what we were just talking about a couple minutes ago, this idea of trying to undo, you know, this huge machinery of these rollbacks that have been put into motion the last 4 years. We really only have a good chance at doing that if we get a new administration in January. If we continue under the Trump administration for 4 more years, more rules will be finalized. There's a possibility, of course, that courts could strike down a lot of the rules, and that has been happening already. The Trump administration's record on environmental cases has not been good so far. They have lost, I think, 72 out of 87 cases, according to a tracker at NYU. So there is a little bit of, you know, a little sliver of hope there that, you know, the judicial system could kind of step in and, you know, not allow these rollbacks to go forward. But if more rollbacks continue to be finalized and some courts agree to uphold these rollbacks, I mean, the damage is immeasurable. And I think, as we've all seen and experienced, climate change is here. It's not something that's far off, that's like this threat at some point in the future. It's here. It's been here. It's happening today. It's happening to people across the country. And I hope that we can shift into a dialogue and an understanding where we start to think about climate change as really a problem with people's continued survival and welfare, and that we can humanize climate change and shift it from, you know, sort of this jargony world about emissions and all of the wonky things, you know, that I spend my time talking about, but really trying to shift the narrative on a national level to the more human stories, so that we can understand that we are facing climate change and that we need to take action, and that taking action will not only improve people's lives, but also save people's lives.
Sharon, you quoted John Walk in your piece, an attorney with the NRDC, and he said the Trump administration is the first in the history of the agency to devote itself so relentlessly to a rollback agenda without even a pretense of meaningfully reducing environmental pollution. What else are you hearing from people about what's at stake?
Well, I mean, everything is at stake, right? And I'm, you know, seconding what Caitlin just said, and I would like to add on to it as well, because, you know, we rely, you can tell when you, from reporting on these things, I can tell you how important the courts are. And to refer us to another crisis happening at the same time, you know, Trump has already made many, many appointments to the federal courts, the same courts that are going to be hearing these rollbacks. So the next president, whoever it is going to be able to make judicial appointments too, and they're incredibly important, right? So that's another piece of this. But, you know, I just don't, I mean, we don't have any time to waste. We're already, it's already, you know, it's such, we're already obviously living through this, and I don't have to tell you people in California this, you know, and I mean, I feel like the, you know, we began even 4 years ago when, you know, which now feels like a century, but, you know, there was this, it was a Chinese hoax and this kind of, you know, ridiculous rhetoric about dismissing climate change. And now, I mean, it's, I don't even know that, you know, what his latest, what verbiage he uses, but basically it, you know, so much has changed in 4 years. It's become only more dire. I don't think it's defensible for this administration to talk about hoaxes anymore. But whatever, you know, but it doesn't matter what they say. It matters what they do. And they've done exactly the opposite of what they should have. So anyway, everything is at stake, including the courts, is what I would say.
Sharon Lerner is an investigative reporter with The Intercept, where she covers these issues, and you can find her latest piece at yourcallradio.org. Sharon, thanks so much for your reporting, as always, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Caitlin McCoy is a Climate, Clean Air, and Energy Fellow for the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard University. They've been tracking the administration's environmental rollbacks. Caitlin, huge thanks to you and your team for your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks again for having me, and I'll pass that along to the rest of the team.
Great. Thank you. And we'd love to have you both back soon. I just got two updates on my phone about unhealthy air in the Bay Area. If you can, stay inside as much as possible. I also got a heat advisory in the Bay Area until 7 p.m. Cooling centers will be open today. Be sure to call older adults and people with compromised immune systems. Be sure to hydrate. You can find more information at sf72.org, sf72.org. And if you need any additional resources, you can head over to kalw.org, and on the right-hand side, find resources. We know this is a tough time for so many. If you need any emotional support, there are a lot of phone numbers there. KALW.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping the studio running. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about what is at stake with an open Supreme Court seat. This is Your Call. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar.